Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to Monday. Monday evening, to be precise. About a minute and a half past the hour where I am. Lord knows what it'll be when the internet latency gets this to you. Awfully happy to have you on board this evening. Weekend is over. 2 days of enforced are kind of over. Although, if you were paying attention, you could have broken your silence last night with our very own John Fox on All Foxed Up. So it's not entirely true when I say that it's kind of 2 days of enforced silence for me. Okay, is that a little bit clearer? Yeah. Okay, good. Not yet. So I'm all better now. Hope things are working out nicely for you. And, I've been a bad talk show host. Well, not bad. Just, what's the word I'm looking for? Less than prudent. There we go. Less than prudent. Since we're not doing much in the way of Christmas this year, I've decided to take it upon myself to cook something yummy every day from now until the new year. Things that I don't ordinarily have a whole lot of time for doing. I've tried to figure out a way to make time for doing. Something yummy out of the oven, off the stove, every day. And I just pulled several pans of homemade chocolate chip cookies out of the oven, to the delighted squeals of every children from the age of 41 all the way down to, you know, not quite 2. And I had a few myself. Now, I've said in the past that I don't spend a lot of time, I try not to eat a lot before the show, because it kind of makes me feel slow and stupid. But you can't have fresh, hot, squishy chocolate chip and pecan cookies out of the oven and not indulge in them a little bit yourself. And so I might be a little slow and stupid this evening. You just can't resist them, can you? Mm-mm. No way. So, that happened a little bit earlier. Before we go too far into the program, I wanted to mention something to you that you might find interesting if you are looking for gifts for, say, a young person, or, you know, along those lines. A while back, gosh, it's probably over a year now, we had on this program an old friend of mine and a darn fine human being, a filmmaker and a performance artist by the name of Steve Trash. And Steve's a heck of a guy, a really, really creative soul. And he's got, I saw a little hooray on his Facebook page, which reminds me of something else. Do you Facebook? Do you MySpace? We're on both, and I try to sort of blab through the day. I personally find Facebook more enjoyable just for the interface value. MySpace is just too busy for my little sort of attention deficit disorder self. But we're there. look us up. We are there in the form of the network, the Horn, and we are also there in the form of my own personal page on both MySpace and Facebook. Let's use this functionality. What do you say? But at any rate, so I was checking out a couple of Facebook messages earlier in the day, and I had a note from Steve Trash, great all-around great guy, and he's feeling kind of froggy because he said he's had a rather it's not every day that you can claim an accomplishment like this. Steve Trash, you'll recall, is an environmental magician. Isn't that just neat? Isn't it? He's an environmental magician. And so he teaches kids, mainly, and curious grown-ups as well, about such things as being green and recycling and having a smaller footprint on the planet, that kind of thing. And he does it very, very well. And he's one of those... Anybody who thinks that show business is easy doesn't know. This guy travels a lot. But he has a lot of fun doing it, too. And what a magician. I mean, I remember way back when we were in school together when he started doing the magician thing. And he was good then, and he's awesome now. So anyway, if you've got somebody that you're going to, especially someone of a curious mind, someone that you think might be having a bent towards something like performance and illusion. Well, you want to hear about something neat. I just love this. I'm so proud of Steve. The official Steve Trash Green Magic set. It's produced by a green toy company called Imagiplay. Imagiplay. The website is imagiplay.com. And in fact, I wandered around there a little bit today. I didn't even see that they had gotten the Green Magic set up on the site yet, so you might want to contact them. I can't tell you how much it costs or exactly what all's in it, but I know that because Steve Trash did this, that it's going to be, it's not just some little Adam, oh, God, remember Stuckey's, the little roadside junk stores, and yeah, you'd stop and they had a little Adam's dog that was, Adam's magic tricks, dogs smoking cigarettes and whoopee cushions and joy buzzers and stuff like that. This is going to be a lot more than that. And apparently Steve has been working his butt off getting this thing out there, hopefully in time for the holiday season. So, you know, I don't know. I guess what, maybe age 8 to 12, 13 maybe? Maybe lower, maybe higher. I don't know. I haven't had a chance to talk with Steve much, at all about this yet. But have a look. Imagiplay.com, Imagiplay.com. And you may have to contact them directly. Like I said, I don't know that they've updated the website enough yet to include this. But what a great idea. And I, you know... not even a little golf clap, big golf clap to Steve Trash for thinking like this. This is, what would engage a young mind more? A magic set where he could amaze your friends? Or another... Nintendo game to suck his brain out through, or her brain out through his or her eyeballs. So if you've got someone who's young, kiddish, I mean, you got to be able to read instructions and comprehend and follow directions. Have a look for this. The Green Magic set from Imagiplay. Imagiplay.com, Imagiplay.com. And you know what? This is for real. Because we don't do ads here. This isn't an advertisement. This is just a recommendation of some of the work of someone who is doing great work and is absolutely deserving of your business. Okay? Yeah. So I just wanted to mention that, and I wanted to mention the Facebook, the social networking thing, because, you know, I'm not so good. We do a lot of radio around here, and it doesn't leave a lot of time for that kind of thing, but I'm trying to build that network of friends, to build that network of people, future friends, people who can be part of this process, who will enjoy sharing time with us, sharing ideas, and looking toward fixing this country that the Bush administration have spent the last 8 years urinating all over, and a few other things too. Because it's going to take the power of a lot. You got to dream before you can do, and it's going to take the power of a lot of dreams before we can do a whole lot of anything. So, you know, just a thought as we go forward. Let's not keep anybody waiting. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. This is Juanita.
Hey, Juanita. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm glad to be back.
You enjoying that cooking, I know.
Oh, I shouldn't have eaten the cookies, Juanita. I just shouldn't have. I feel kind of...
Yeah, I ate a bunch of boxed candy this morning.
That'll do it.
It's not very good. I wanted to tell you that I've been seeing ads on TV about clean coal.
And the fact that it's a fraud?
Yeah.
Yeah, isn't that neat? Apparently CNN has changed its Nick Regalado was telling me earlier today, I got a note from him saying they had those blood red CNN letters on the screen. Now they're green.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I hadn't noticed that.
there's a series of ads out about clean coal, pointing out the fact, as you noticed, that clean coal is a fake, a fraud,
right.
You know, fat-free lard. It's an advertising slogan.
I saw it on some different places and all. I don't watch one channel very long unless I'm watching a movie or something, but. I thought quite a bit, and I thought, well, that's great.
Yeah, it's I'm proud to see these things out here. In fact, I heard an extended interview on National Petroleum Radio with Al Gore, and
yeah.
then for balance's sake, they brought in some PR sick PR flack from the coal industry. To talk about how coal, clean coal is it's a synergistic thing. Yeah, they haul out the $10 word. That's synergistic.
Yeah.
That's what it is. But the sad thing out of what I heard, and I'm not criticizing the ads. I think the ads are doing a great job, and it's been needed for a long, long time.
Yeah.
The one thing that the report that I heard on NPR didn't do was it didn't talk about the extraction process at all.
Yeah.
And that's so important as we consider clean coal, because as long as you're trashing entire states, communities, counties, people's lives, you can never call coal clean. You just can't.
Yeah. Maybe it's just to get people's attention for starters, you know, sort of like a baby's first sets. Maybe that's what they have in mind, you know.
No, it's just that the hillbillies don't matter. You know what? I'm talking about from the coal standpoint. They'll never worry about the whether it's clean or dirty extracting it, because we don't matter. Now, on the other side, I think they're trying to focus on the absence of the so-called technology. I hope it is a baby step, and that at some point in time, the affected residents of the communities will matter.
Yes, because some people's not going to listen to the technical things.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I understand.
Mm-hmm. Did you get those things I sent you from about Al Gore?
Yes, I did.
Being against the clean coal?
Yes. And that's, that was part and parcel of that NPR story.
I wonder why this message doesn't get to, like, Obama or
Oh, I think it's getting to him. I really think it is getting to him. It's just he's not out there making a lot of noise. You know, going back as far as 2007, he said in Kentucky that, quote, there's got to be a better way of getting at coal than blowing the tops off of mountains.
Yeah.
So that tells me, you know, he's aware of the problem. We've got to give him the backing and the starch to help us stand up against
him. Yeah. Well, let's hope. You know, you never know.
I bet that's
what this might be going to happen quicker than we think.
Yeah, well, I think that all we can do is cross our fingers right now and work a little harder.
I heard a little bit of, you know, like a snippet. It was on Buzzflash of, what's his face's interview of Obama on Meet the Press.
Oh, yeah. Brokaw.
Yeah. Brokaw. Anyway.
Mr. Obama.
Yeah.
Sounds like he can only talk with the roof of his mouth.
About the car industry, and I thought Obama did really well. I was well pleased.
I think it was a fairly straightforward interview based on what I saw of it. He seemed.
I don't know if Brokaw meant it to be, but I think he might have been surprised because I think Obama was surprised for a lot of people. You know, like Fox News trying to make something about, what's his name, Beard.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a good answer.
Well, I think the whole thing, you know, look, when he has the, when he, it takes guts to look at the, because for 8 years, you know, we've had George Bush rape the Treasury and then September 11th, 2001 happened, and he said, go shopping.
Yeah, I know it.
And we bailed out the airlines. You know, has everybody forgotten that we bailed out the airlines right after September 11th?
Right.
And they took the money off for themselves and started laying off workers?
Yeah.
All that happened. The economy is rosy. Everybody seems to have also forgotten that George Bush was the first president since Hoover to have negative job growth in his first term as president. But nobody could ever say, you know, there's a problem here. It's tough. We got some hard times coming. Well, Barack Obama put paid to those that style for the last 8 years. You know, Sunday he said, listen, it's tough and it's going to get tougher.
Yeah.
But we can beat this. We can get through it.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I love hearing him. I really do. I'm like a lot of people, I'm disappointed in some of his nominees, but I'm going to hope for the best. And I like that he stood up for the people that are staying in the warehouse, you know, where they lost their jobs in Chicago.
Oh, I'm really proud of that. That's a level of labor, dare we say it, militancy.
Yeah.
That this country has needed to see for a long, long time, just working people sitting, saying, hell no. No more. Enough.
Right. They were supposed to have 60 days notice, and they got 3 days.
And there's some whys and wherefores behind that, too.
Yeah.
You know, we had some very decent things to say about Bank of America last week because of their stance on, or their decision to stop funding mountaintop removal.
Right.
But there they go. They just got a horse gagging wad of your money and mine.
Mm-hmm.
And now they won't free that money up to keep places like this window factory open.
Well, now, did you hear what they said?
No.
Wasn't their problem. It wasn't their problem.
Please tell me you're joking. Please say, Bob, I'm pulling your leg. It's Monday, and I know that you're full of chocolate chip cookies, and I'm pulling your leg.
No, I'm not full. I'm full of candy.
Bank of America said it wasn't their problem.
Yeah.
Lord God.
They were cattling all along from Bank of America. And Bank of America said it wasn't their problem. That's what I heard them say today.
Well, mercy sakes.
Just any news people. I try to listen to somebody I think's got some honesty about them.
It's not our problem.
Isn't it awful?
Yeah, it's not their problem now that's the thing. We talk about the Wall Street bailout and we talk about the Detroit bailout. Now it's a bridge loan. Let's stop beating up the language, but go ahead. Yeah. What?
You know what some of the credit cards are doing? I saw this on local news. They're contacting people that have got really good credit and telling them that they're lowering their amount, that they can get on credit and also raising the interest, I believe. And some of them was on there and she said, she called them and told them, I haven't given you permission to do this. And they said, we don't have to have your permission. And she said, this is going to ruin my credit, my good credit. I don't really understand that, but I'm sure she knows what she's talking about.
It probably will have a negative impact on her credit because it'll make it harder to pay the debt off.
Yeah. And I think now that's some people, I really think that they should.
But, the Bush administration, Juanita, fought tooth and toenail against every sort of reasonable customer, dare we say it, consumer-oriented banking regulation in the last 8 years. To be fair, they also, the Bush administration did this in a couple of occasions with the connivance of the Democratic Party, with the connivance of people like Robert Byrd, with the connivance of Joe Biden, with the connivance of, that bankruptcy bill passed with a lot of Democratic votes in both the House and the Senate.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure
And that bankruptcy bill was practically, that bankruptcy bill, Juanita, was practically written. No, it wasn't practically written. It was written by the credit card industry.
Yeah. Let me tell you what I got in the mail today, off an offer.
Okay.
For $250 credit, minimum credit, with a program fee of $95, account setup fee of $29, an annual fee of $48, a monthly servicing fee for $7, available credit on first statement, $71.
Oh, merciful sakes. This was an offer?
Yeah, for a MasterCard.
Well, see, that brings home something that, who was it? It was our buddy Jurassic Pork, who months ago pointed out that as much as a third to a half of all credit card industry profits do not come from interest on the debt, but comes instead on phony baloney fees.
Yeah, and late charges and if you have a late charge, then you'll also have that you've gone over the credit limit.
Oh, sure.
Often, especially when it's just something like that, $250, starting out for $250. And, some people say it's worse than the.
If you ran a scam like that in the subway in New York, New York's finest would come and haul you away. That's fraud. That's consumer fraud.
Jank Giger, he said he had a credit card. He said they kept thinking, well, the bill came really often. And he got to figuring it, and he was getting a bill like every 18 days. And he called them up and said, what's going on? And they said, well, that's the way we bill it, 18 days. And he said, of course, he got rid of that one.
Yeah, in a hurry.
18 days. Turn around.
And, of course, if you read the fine print on your credit card, you'll find that you're either doing business with somebody who's in South Dakota or Delaware, and that by taking the card, you have agreed to never sue them, and that you will subject yourself to the laws of the state of Delaware or South Dakota, where they have practically no limitations on the things that credit card companies can do.
And they're coming up with new things all the time.
Sure. Because the American people, Juanita, you and I often talk about the savvy and the honesty, frankly, of that generation that raised us both.
Yeah.
That generation's gone, and that generation wouldn't have put up with this kind of garbage.
Yeah.
From a credit card company, it said, "To heck with it, you know, I'll save it till I can afford to buy it."
Yeah.
Well, see, consumer culture America has been told that that is not only dirty and nasty and makes you a bad person, but it's also heresy and will probably keep you out of heaven. That kind of behavior where you save till you can afford something. So we don't read the fine print, and people in various states go and pull levers and punch holes and fill in little blanks and touch screens and everything for candidates who run and tell them on the front end, "I'm pro-business. We got to grow some business, y'all."
Oh, well, they're the ones, you know, the big companies are the ones that hand out the jobs. That's what they say. You know, to me, I thought about it a lot, and I think it's nothing much more than slavery. Not as bad as slavery, but a form of slavery.
Yeah, wage slavery. Sure it is.
When you trickle down, well, what do the slaves have to take? Whatever was trickled down to them.
Sure.
That's where soul food came from. They had the
leavings and the last and had to make it taste good.
Yeah. And they found out that was the best part.
Beans and rice. Mm-hmm.
And the different cuts, you know, that whatever was left over, what they had. Some of the most delicious food you ever want to have.
You know what? There's not just a whole lot of pig meat on a rack of ribs, but if you put that rack of ribs in the hands of somebody who knows what to do with it, it turns into something marvelous.
Oh yeah.
And that's a throwaway cut. Neck bones, throwaway cut.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
because the swanky types, they wanted to eat literally high on the hog.
Right. Oh yeah. That's where that came from.
Mm-hmm. It is indeed.
And, you know, and I'll always remember I had a cousin that was a butcher, and he ran his own business for a while. And you go in the store with all this beautiful meat, and he said, "This is what the rich people eat." You know, it was separate. It would cost more money. And I thought about when we had all that scare about the beef and all, poor animals had the...
Getting shoved around by forklifts and... Yeah, right.
And then I remember Bush, that was another time when he was out in Texas and outside in the yard, you know, talking to a few reporters. And he said, "And don't tell everybody to eat beef." He said, "I'm eating beef now," and I thought, "Yeah, I know.
I'm eating beef, and my brain's just fine, see? Yeah, my brain's just fine."
Yeah. He wasn't eating in dirt. He was eating high on the beef.
That's right. High on the steer in that
the
pit.
The kind that wasn't fed ground-up cow bone.
Yeah, ground-up other cattle, yeah.
Yeah, that really shocked me when I found that out. I didn't know it until...
Well, when I'm in the grocery store, it costs a little bit more now, but I've taken to buying, one of the brands is Eggland's Best, and then Kroger has their own in-house brand of eggs. I buy eggs that are vegetarian fed. No hormones, no antibiotics, and fed strictly vegetarian feed. And you know what? If you're somebody who appreciates an egg, you can tell all the difference in the world.
Oh yeah, it's just like even chicken; it doesn't taste like it used to. You know that you buy in the store; it's nothing like it used to be.
No.
Free ramen, when you had the free ramen ones, you know, and
mm-hmm.
they weren't kept in little boxes and never let out. I mean, That breaks my heart. I hate for anybody. I hate for animals to be mistreated.
But that's how you get them to the table in consumerist America.
Oh yeah.
You know, we joke and we play and we have a lot of fun on this show with what we call the religion industry, Juanita. But the fact of the matter is, the religion of America is consumerism.
Yeah.
And the altar is the cash register.
Yeah.
You know, you were talking about people working at nigh unto slavery. I stopped to put fuel in my vehicle today.
Mm-hmm.
And remember once upon a time when fast food restaurants were all freestanding establishments? You know, you had a McDonald's over here and a Burger King over there.
Yeah. They're going in together or something.
Well, now you'll have two or three operations crammed into one little convenience store.
Yeah.
And so you can buy your fuel and get your cigarettes and your pop and then go and get some artery-hardening fast food all at the same time. And so I'm standing there in line waiting to pay for my fuel. And I look over to the in-house, let's see, this particular affair had an in-house Taco Hell on one side and an in-house Subway on the other.
Mm-hmm.
And I stood there watching the people working at the Taco Hell. And, you know, these weren't little pimply-faced teenagers working their first job for minimum wage. That was the first thing that struck me. These were full-grown adults. These were people who probably had children to take care of.
Mm-hmm.
And they're working at minimum wage.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and nothing you could nothing that could approach being anything called a living wage.
No.
And they're sitting there working because the line was around the corner and out the door. There were six cars at the drive-thru, and they're sitting there just going like machines, like machines, like machines, like machines. You know, and sweating because you know they're working over a steam table and That's labor. That's hard work to do on your feet for 8 hours a day. That's worth more than any so-called minimum wage.
Right. And there's it's not just women either. It's men, too.
Oh, yeah. I'd say it was an equal mix.
I've been there myself. You know, I never made much over it, minimum wage, when I did make more than minimum wage. And we had to pay taxes. People say, you know, if you make minimum wage, you don't have to pay any income tax. Yes, you do. I always had to. I never got all my money back.
No, no. Even if you get some of it back in the way of a refund, you're paying it out on the front end, and you're missing it bad.
Yeah. And, you know, that's besides Social Security.
Right.
I'm talking about regular income tax. And I haven't heard anybody say anything like that lately, but I used to hear it a lot. You know, they say, well, people that make minimum wage, they don't have to pay income tax.
Bull.
That's a bunch of baloney.
In the state of Alabama a couple of years ago, they had a big stinking fight over the fact that there was a move on to raise the floor level at which Alabama charged state income tax. You are in the state of Alabama, unless they've changed it and I missed it, in the state of Alabama, Juanita, you are liable for income tax the instant that you make a little bit more than $9,000 a year.
Oh boy!
If you make $9,000 a year, the minute you do, you're on the hook for state income tax.
Yeah. What?
There are working people in the state of Alabama and all over this country who pay more in income tax than some corporations.
Percentage wise, yeah.
Sometimes actual cash wise.
Yeah, some of the corporations aren't even paying it, aren't they?
There are those that have an effective tax rate of 1%, 2%, or 3% by the time they get done with all the dummied up, faked up, frauded up rules.
Oh, you know what I loved about what Obama said to Brokaw?
Mm-hmm.
I just now thought about the one thing he said that I really liked. Brokaw was saying, you know, that as soon as the prices of gas went down, then the consumers started going back to their big cars, big vehicles. And he said, shouldn't they be taxed so that it goes back up to 4 so they will start being more frugal? And Obama said, they're having enough trouble already without us putting war on it. In so many words. I thought that was great.
Well, I did. I was pleased with the whole thing.
You heard the whole thing.
I said I was pleased with the whole thing.
Yeah.
What I didn't actually see in here, I read in the form of a transcript.
Yeah, I heard him say something about smoking. You know, I didn't see that, but I read that about him. Him saying sometime he slipped up
mm-hmm.
and went back to smoking, and he said, "Well, then that means you didn't quit." But
yeah, I hate this judgmentalism. I don't want the militant, radical, anti-smoking forces who hit the email box on this. For the next 4 to 8 years, I want Barack Obama to have all the cigarettes he wants. I don't want a man jonesing for a cigarette who's trying to fix a wrecked economy.
Right.
You know, it reminds – oh, dear, here we go. It reminds me of the fact that FDR was a chain smoker.
Yeah.
He died young, of course. FDR was a chain smoker.
Yeah.
Winston Churchill smoked cigars and drank brandy in bed of a morning and nursed a drink all day long. Adolf Hitler, on the other hand, was a vegetarian and didn't smoke and hated smokers. I know it's a false dichotomy and a bad analogy, but you know if a guy, of course I was kind of like this with Bill Clinton too. If he's getting the job done, what business is it of mine? I mean, look, we've just had 8 years of a guy who was allegedly faithful to his wife. Oh, glory!
Sure. Oh, sure.
You know, those aren't whether one smokes or drinks. If one does it in any sort of reasonable moderation. Well, it's kind of hard to do that with cigarettes, though, because once you're a junkie, you're a junkie.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do that, that's not a character flaw.
I've been there. I used to smoke years ago. And I know when you run out and you can't get some, you go nuts.
Yeah, you do. But I'm sure, you know, the for-profit media, for-profit-only media will have a... conference and we smelled nicotine. Oh, we smelled a cigarette on his breath. Should we impeach? And the Republicans will be screaming in the Congress, impeach, impeach. Except they got one little problem, and that is the tobacco industry backs them and not the Democrats. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's one situation where the lobbyists can keep the right wing in check. But I do, you know, if it was,
but it,
I'd send him a carton.
But, well, they say that the White House is a non-smoking zone, so I guess he'll have to go outside to smoke.
Him and the CIA, or him and the Secret Service.
Or what, not the SS, Secret Service.
Yeah.
My God. But I really like some of the things he says. You know, you're getting a cold drink of water after drinking dirty water for several years.
Yeah.
In a way, that's one way to describe it. You know, to have somebody, it's like when we first started getting more radio, you know, shows like yours. It was like a calm in a storm because when Carrie lost, I just about lost it. But I had that to cling to. And it really carried me through to be able to hear somebody of like mind, you know. Not 100%, but, you know.
Right.
Somebody that was of like mind and considered other people's opinions valuable. And, you know, not like the right-wing people. And because to think about, we had to go through all those years again, in addition to what we'd already been through.
Right.
And you think about how many people have been killed, how many of our people have been killed over in Iraq and so forth, that had he not gone in, I'm sure that things would have been different. In fact, I can say I know.
Well, yeah, I think it is fair to say that you know.
But because I know that Democrats do things in a different way, then, you know, we may not be perfect.
Yeah, and giving credit where credit's due, I know there's been a lot of misgivings about this appointment and that appointment, but I got nothing but good feelings about, and I'm sure somebody will tell me, you know, how dead wrong I am. But right now, I got nothing but good feelings about who he's appointed as his VA administrator.
Oh, yeah. I liked what they said about that. I really did. I thought that was great. And it should be that way. To me, those people should have always had the best. They should have had, the money should have gone to them. And you know what they said yesterday? That, like, the ice that they were served, this, I think this was in the Green Zone or whatever over in Iraq,
mm-hmm.
was put in the same vehicles that they'd had dead bodies in and had not been cleaned out. And that was served to our troops. And that's not giving of your best. This is by Kellogg, whatever, KBR or whatever they call it.
No,
Kellogg something.
Yeah, Kellogg Brown and Root, Kellogg Burn and Loot. Yeah.
Yeah. And then them not having the medal that they did, what was it, the armor. That they deserved.
Yeah. Right.
And just all kind of things like that. Running out of bullets, running out of drinking water, you know, running out of anything to drink, running out of food. And the food be rotten?
Yep.
It just,
Wasn't there?
It did not go to them.
No, well, wasn't there another supplying the troops, the story in the last week or so? Something in my head's going bing, 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 and I can't remember, but it was something equally disgusting.
Probably. Well, there was another thing about it.
I know. Well, I know what one of them was. It turns out one of the subcontractors for one of the American corporations over there is keeping a bunch of South Asian so-called contract workers, in other words, you know, those nigh onto slaves, keeping them locked up in a warehouse building in Kuwait. Doesn't know quite what to do with them.
I believe it. I can believe it. I really can.
It's not, it's nothing tough to get your mind around.
There's things that we probably never would even dream of that has been going on, because we already know things that are bad enough. But, you know, when I heard about Abu Ghraib, all the little things that I was thinking came together, and I knew that what I'd been thinking was true. And that is not what my country's about.
No.
Anybody that thinks Obama is not for anything that we as Americans stand for, these Americans, if they're for what has been going on in the last 8 years, especially, I don't know that kind of America. To me, I think I've always believed that America was the United States was supposed to be individuals, individual thinkers, you know. But it seems like you get these individual thinkers who want to help, and they're always vilified by those who think that they.
Well, the other side has a machine. Well, that's the other side has a machine built to do exactly that, Juanita.
Yeah.
You know, we're trying, but it's an uphill fight.
Yeah.
So, but your instincts are spot on. Without a doubt.
I have no doubt after Abu Ghraib. I kind of thought, well, I don't know. There's a lot of things about a lot of things. And that, to me, that captured, I thought, oh, okay. I mean, I knew it wasn't the little English girl. You know, those three.
Wait.
Old dog collars.
Wait just a minute here. Juanita, have you caught the latest, the controversy, the one of Obama's speechwriter, some guys at, I guess, a fraternity party or whatever, and they've got a cutout of Hillary Clinton, and he's, like, groping her. He's got his hand on the photographs where her breast would be.
No.
It's a terrible controversy. If only the Republicans were in power, they could probably have impeachment hearings over it.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not just the Republicans. A certain shrill so-called liberal out there is screaming that this photo of the – and the guy's name is Favreau, okay?
His what?
His name is Favreau. John Favreau. He's in his late 20s. He's a speechwriter for Obama, chief White House speechwriter. And it's this silly photo of, one guy's licking the side of the cardboard cutout's head or kissing it or something and holding up a beer bottle to her mouth, and the other guy's got his hand across the photograph's chest, and a shrill left-winger is screaming that it's the same as Abu Ghraib! I guess the motivation is the same as Rush Limbaugh's ridiculously similar excuses for the Abu Ghraib torturers.
Yeah.
Well, no, there's a big difference.
It.
There's a difference between getting a broom handle, you know, put there.
Yeah.
And somebody doing stupid drunken things next to a cardboard cutout. It is, after all, a cardboard cutout.
Right. And there's also a difference between being forced to stay in one position.
Oh, or sopping wet, or freezing temperatures, or dogs barking at you.
Or then, Rumsfeld, well, I work standing up most of the time. I can stand it, they can. Well, he did it because he wanted to.
Yeah, there's a big difference there. Yeah, there it is. There's that story. Wait just a minute, Juanita. I got to bust in on you, the food thing.
Uh-huh.
I just found it. Headline, Halliburton accused of supplying rotten food to U.S. forces. Joshua Eller, a civilian who worked for the U.S. Air Force in 2006 at the Balad Air Force Base northeast of Baghdad, alleges that Kellogg Brown and Root, quote, knowingly and intentionally supplied to U.S. forces and other individuals food that was expired, spoiled, rotten, or that may have been contaminated with shrapnel and other materials.
Yeah.
KBR shipped ice served to U.S. forces in trucks that had been used to carry human remains.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's that. Yeah, that's what you were talking about. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it still had traces of body fluids and putrefied remains. They burned medical waste that contained human body parts in the open air burn pit. Wild dogs in the area raided the burn pit and carried off human remains. The wild dogs could be seen roaming the base with body parts in their mouths.
Yeah. Somebody asked the question, what nationality were the people that the body parts belong to?
At that state of decomposition, it's kind of hard to tell. Just a little bit tough to tell, I'm guessing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, getting back to that on a lighter note, Elizabeth is not very happy with Obama's ex-preacher.
Jeremiah, yeah, you know, you're going to be, 180, you're going to be so proud of me. I was at the doctor's office today for a follow-up appointment.
Yeah.
And there was nobody else in the waiting area, and so I waited until the staff weren't looking, and I snuck over and turned the television away from Fox.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, there was the view, and I thought, and where I ordinarily would have gone click, 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 and gone on past it, I said, by golly, while I'm waiting for the doctor, I'm going to sit here, and Juanita would be proud of me. So I sat there, and I watched the view. And I saw that bubble-headed bleach blonde have a plum hissy because Jeremiah Wright done called her a dumb broad. Have I got the gist of it right?
Yeah.
Well, pretty is as pretty does. I mean, that's what Mama always said to me.
Uh-huh.
I mean, well, there's hours and hours and hours of tape that sort of proves that Elizabeth Hasselbeck is a dumb broad.
I don't think she knows how far she's gone. I really don't. I don't think she knows how wide a sweep there is of people who don't like what she's done. And I know she's got fans.
Bless your heart, Juanita. You are so kind and so sweet and so decent. You say it that way, and I would have just said she's a moron. There, see, I haven't. That's a completely non-sexist statement.
I think that's a man thing.
Well, you know, memo to Jeremiah Wright. Don't call her a dumb broad.
No.
Call her a moron. Because she is. I mean, the woman probably can't open a door without instructions. So.
But she knows everything.
Well, she knows everything that Sean Hannity decides to tell her.
Oh, yeah. But she knows all kinds of things. She's an expert on no matter what subject they bring up.
Oh, I know. Ain't it the truth?
And hers is the most important one to be told.
But it was kind of interesting to watch some of the other members of the panel. Because didn't Barbara get banned about something he said, too?
Something
about Fox and ABC being the gates of hell?
Oh, well, I don't know.
Or did I just not understand that correctly?
Well, she tells O'Reilly what she thinks of him, you know, in a humorous sort of way. Well, you know, he's on that program quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know. This a lot of things has been said.
Well, I got the idea that Barbara wasn't particularly thrilled.
Barbara's. I don't know. And I think sometimes she pity pats Elizabeth too much. I don't think that's good for Elizabeth. Not if she's going to grow. And
well, grow how?
Well, she's not going to grow by being sympathized with so much. You know,
no, but I mean, in what form? Grow intellectually? Grow morally? Grow spiritually?
Morally, I would say, because, you know, not considering that she might have to reap what she says about people sometime. And, poor little Sherry, she's a new Christian. You know, she was raised Jehovah's Witness, and she tried. She said, well, he shouldn't have said that. He should have said, I'll pray for her. And I understand, you know, new Christians, some people say they should be shut up and locked away until they get over the first excitement.
Yeah.
Especially when you're, if you're, involved in the Pentecostal.
Oh, Lordy.
And I think that's what she is, yeah. And it's, it can be sweet sometimes.
Yeah, it can be. And I try to.
I wasn't raised that way, but I was in it, and a lot of it I loved, but.
I know. But some of it's just intolerable.
It's getting worse and worse.
You know, when you got fundamentalists in Texas deliberately slamming somebody on the highway while they're going 100 miles an hour and saying that God told them to do it because they weren't driving in a Christian fashion.
I didn't hear about that.
Oh, did you not?
No.
See, I was trying. Some of these stories, Juanita, I try to save for prayer meeting.
Yeah.
And I've been hanging on to this like a dog hanging on to an old bone, and it just won't hold. A speeding truck, and you ought to see that the photographs are stunning. Just waffled this automobile. Speeding truck rammed a woman's sedan at over 100 miles an hour last Friday on a Texas freeway. So this is more than a week old. Michael E. Schwab is a resident of Blooming Grove, Texas, and he says the woman, quote, was not driving like a Christian.
So was he?
Well, God told him that.
Uh-huh.
The woman violated, she was driving north on Highway 281, broke no traffic laws, and this Schwab creep, this religious fundamentalist, this literalist, just slammed into the rear of her car. Both vehicles got spun through the median and wound up coming to a stop on the barrier on the far side of the road.
Wow.
The Lieutenant Kyle Coleman of the Bexar County, I'm probably mispronouncing, I don't think you can pronounce that any other way, but maybe it's Bexar, Texas, you never know. Bexar yeah. County Sheriff's Department said, he just said God said she wasn't driving right and she needed to be taken off the road. And he went on and said the other vehicle was not driving like a Christian and it was Jesus' will for him to punish the car.
They said that?
Well, that's what the guy who did it said.
Yeah, but I thought it sounded like the police were going along with him.
Well, the cop did say God must have been with him because any other time the severity of this crash, it would have been a fatality.
I'll tell you something now. I'll tell you another one. I'm sure you've heard this about Bush getting that award from that preacher
the Peace Award?
Yeah.
You didn't. Oh, now, Juanita. You did not think Rick Warren was kind of moderate. Tell me you didn't just say that.
Well, I didn't know. I didn't really know that much about him. I thought maybe he was, but I was very wrong.
He's the heir apparent to Jerry Falwell. I mean, he's even bloating up like Jerry Falwell. He used to be a reasonably thin little fella. And he's ballooning. But that's what happens with these fundamentalists. They internalize all these lies and they internalize all this hate and they internalize all this poison and it makes them just, it's nasty.
Yeah.
It's nasty. Oh, by the way, though, something I was curious about, this car that this woman was driving, the lieutenant from the sheriff's department, said it was God was with him because any other time the severity of the crash, it would have been a fatality.
Uh huh.
This was a Chevrolet Malibu, and it's a mess, and there's no fixing it. It's a total loss. It looks like the rear end of it has been already put through the car crusher.
Uh-huh.
But she got out, and she walked away, the driver of this car who wasn't driving Christian enough. And you got to wonder if that would have been the case in a Hyundai Elantra or the Kia I don't know, whatever they do.
Yeah.
But this thing held up to that rear ender in fine fashion.
Yeah.
So to those people who say that there's no quality left in Detroit, this Malibu with the accordioned rear end would appear to put the lie to that.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Lord help us all. Oh, boy.
So you just, you never, you know, when I was a kid, there were public service ads that said, be alert for the other guy when you're driving. Remember those? Watch out for the other guy because, you know, the accident is always the fault of the other guy. And then this other guy hit me. Well,
I just had a terrible accident in Tampa. Was on the local news where they got into a road rage. And people were killed, you know, thrown out in the road, everything, two vehicles involved.
Mercy sakes.
They said it was road rage. One man got out and shot.
Well, it's Florida, Juanita. No offense. I know that's your home and everything. But Florida, remember, you guys got a law down there that says that if you get stung by a bee, you can shoot somebody.
Yeah, thanks to Jebby.
Yeah, if you're reasonably in fear of somebody, you can just blow them away.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I'm not surprised. And we'll have, you know, we'll have more of this. It's part of the deal with the devil that we make in this country over guns.
Somebody asked Obama if he wanted to take people's guns away, and he said, no, I believe in the Second Amendment. I believe in responsible gun ownership.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, sure, and that's an easy answer. Frankly, that's the right answer. I believe in, I'm in favor mm-hmm. of, not believe, I, you know how I feel about that word.
Mm.
I am in favor of responsible gun ownership.
Yeah.
So am I.
Yeah, responsible, yeah.
Yeah. But when, you know, when people are getting out of their cars and drawing down on somebody else and blowing people
yeah.
away in Florida, when 43-year-old men are playing I'm going to get you with their 3-year-old son and splatter the little boy across the far dining room wall.
Gosh.
Mm. You know, that's not responsible gun ownership, and the NRA can't say that, well, you know, I mean, guns don't kill people, people kill people. Well, people kill 3-year-olds too, and people go wild on the interstate. But you know
yeah.
what? If all you've got on the interstate is a ball bat, things might, well, you know, nobody in their right mind would go after a 3-year-old with a ball bat. Ball bats are for teaching little boys and little girls how to play baseball and softball.
Yeah.
Not to sit there on a board Saturday afternoon and say, I'm going to get you and take a swing at their head. But the thing is, you can blow away that 3-year-old when you've got the shotgun because, Jesus wants us to have more guns.
Yeah.
And really, I'm being a little bit sarcastic, Juanita, but the fact of the matter is, that's how we treat guns in this country. They are an element of our religious obsession. I'm going to have me a gun in case the government ever comes and tells me I can't believe that the earth was created in 7 days. I'll waste them in the name of Jesus.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
I know. Juanita, what a wonderful conversation this has been.
Okay, well, you take care and don't eat too many cookies.
I'm done with the cookies. I promise. I am done with the cookies.
What you cooking tomorrow?
I think tomorrow I'm gonna make some of those little butterscotch chow mein noodle haystack thingies.
Uh huh.
You know.
Any sushi lately?
Not lately, but I'm toying. we'll probably be doing some raw oysters on Christmas if everything works out right.
Okay.
So that'll get.
No. My daddy was into that, but. They used to have these oyster bars here.
Oh, gosh, yes.
No,
but what will...
I don't hardly even like to eat a cooked one.
we do a recipe on Christmas morning called Oysters Bienville. And along the way, some oysters have to be shucked, and the boy and I will stand there in the kitchen working on it all. And it goes back, like everything else in my life, it goes back to my mom and dad. My mother loved raw oysters, and the mere thought of one turned my poor father's face green.
Really?
Yeah,
mom was just the opposite.
And so they'd be standing there in the kitchen shucking oysters, and every now and then my mother would say, Kenneth, look away. And he would, and once she popped one and said, keep looking away, Kenneth, and popped me one, and it was all over from there. I've been hooked ever since. So that's that, but we'll probably do that while we're making the oyster dish on Christmas morning.
Okay.
So that'll be our sushi allotment for the month.
Okay.
Raw oysters count for sushi, don't they? Sure.
Why not?
Juanita, you take care, dear.
Okay, you too.
Have a good evening.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Oh, that was fun. That was a bunch of fun. And I'll take a little break here for the top of the hour, come back. And you know the phone number is 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Locally, it's not just locally, but on your own nickel, 304-658-3333, and email rolls into bob@headonradio.com. See how easy it is? Jump into the chat room, too, if you want to. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Just click on chat room and register. You'll be right there. This is the horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Hey, where'd that hour go? Come back here.
That was fast. It really was.
And just another reminder from the top of the previous hour. We are available, well, what we're working on is eventually having the stream available and so forth on both the Facebook and the MySpace pages. We're waiting, well, we're working through all of that. The indefatigable Nick Regalado has been a humongous help with all of this. And, you know, it's another way to connect with the show. It's another way to interact with the dialogue, the discussion, the debate that we get going on here. And, yeah, save the email about Rupert Murdoch owns MySpace. I know that. But you know what? All kinds of crap birds own all kinds of stuff on the Internet. I know. I mean, look at Google. Bless their little don't be evil hearts out there with their attempt to green their offices and decarbonize their footprint and everything, and they're still running ads for the clean coal monsters, trying to keep it clean. You know, maybe we need to maybe we need a campaign along those lines. Maybe somebody needs to remind Google that they're not so broke. Or that they're, well, I don't know, if their business model is so fragile that they have to take advertising from sleaze merchants like Clean Coal, I don't know, how long can they last? But I'm thinking they're doing okay. Under the circumstances, relatively speaking, in the current ashes of the Bush economy, Bush-merica in a shambles. And it's funny, I haven't seen one of those... One of those big, the chyroned up fonts from CNN. America in a shambles. Bush-merica. No. I saw a comment earlier today. I forget where. Maybe over at Bart Cop. But I liked it. I liked it a lot. We've talked at some considerable length, and we do it every year, about the commercialization of Christmas.
Maybe this is the year to reject it outright. They don't have a lot of choice. That's why I'm trying to do the cooking thing. And see if maybe we can make this the most wonderful Christmas we've ever had. But anyway, maybe this is the year we forestall Christmas altogether. What do you think of celebrating Christmas on January 20th? If ever there has been a reason to forestall Christmas, this is it. And celebrate on a day when some celebrating is really called for. The day that, regardless of what you think of what the future may hold, because at this point it is all speculation, mine, yours, ours, everyone's. On January the 20th, the United States of America, and yea, verily, the world of all religious persuasions, is going to have a reason to celebrate. And celebrate we shall. What do you think? Just hold off on Christmas. Instead of 12 days of Christmas, make it 42 days of Christmas or something. And hold the real winter celebration on January the 20th, when America, at least theoretically, gets free of its recent monstrous past. When we get free of clarifications, when we get free of the misogynistic right-wing fundamentalist gynecologists in charge of women's health at FDA. When we get free of, oh, what's this creep's name, the guy at EPA? Oh, this is was just too... Holy mackerel! Did you see this? This goober at EPA. The administrator, Stephen Johnson. Mr. Johnson. Hey, George, take your Johnson and get the hell out of here! The Philadelphia Inquirer recently profiled EPA Administrator Stephen Johnson. It was in the paper over the weekend. And what Stephen Johnson said is enough to just bring the homemade chocolate chip cookies right up out of me. They asked him about religion and science because, of course, science has been held hostage to the religion industry for 8 long years in the Bush administration. The Bush administration has been 8 long years of the right-wingers, Repiglicans, fundamentalists, corporatists, who have taken that word believe, and nasty enough though that word may be, they've taken that word believe and just, oh, God, they've made it something even nastier and more vile than perhaps it's ever been since the so-called Enlightenment came to Western civilization. And Stephen Johnson is still babbling that filth on the way out. They asked the reporters for the Philadelphia Inquirer, asked Stephen Johnson about religion and science and the separation between the two. For instance, in religion, you can say, I believe that a man rode on the back of a horse that could fly, and he went to the furthest place. In religion, you can say that. You can't say that in science. Given the season, in religion, you can say, I believe that an invisible God raped a little teenage Jewish girl, and she got pregnant and had a baby. And the baby was the son of the invisible God who raped the little teenage Jewish girl, and then the God Daddy had his own son killed. For you. You can say that in religion.
You can't say that in science. Except for the fact that in the last long, eight tortured, miserable, tormented years of the Bush administration, you can! Thanks to the Bush administration and the over-the-top machinations of the religious right and these fundamentalist zealots, there are laws in states like Oklahoma that say that as long as you put Jesus said so on a test answer, you can answer any way you want to. Math class, 2 + 2 = and you can write down, I like turtles, because Jesus likes turtles. And it's fine, A plus for you, Johnny. You can do that in America now. In Texas, the law of the state of Texas, as decided by the Texas Supreme Court, says that if you have been tortured by a religion industry and you sue them, the court, well, the church has the right to demand that the court throw the case out as a violation of its First Amendment rights, and the court has no choice but to do so. Eight long tortured years. In neither of those cases could you do that with any sort of rational view of science being prevalent. A sperm and an egg co-join and form a zygote. This is human reproduction. And little Johnny Fundy can say, no, it ain't! Jesus makes the baby. And the teacher has to go, well, screw it. It's either give little Johnny an A or lose my job. These things didn't happen in a vacuum. There's a creation museum in Kentucky where Adam and Eve sit in a tableau eating peanut butter and jelly sandwiches out of a picnic basket with a vegetarian T-Rex grazing alongside. No, really, you know that. That couldn't happen in a rational society. That could not happen in a society that has any regard whatsoever for science. And then there's Stephen Johnson, the administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency. I personally believe the EPA administrator ought to be raised to secretary status and brought onto the cabinet in light of what we face in the future. Stephen Johnson, but not this guy. Oh, no! EPA Administrator Stephen Johnson told reporters for the Philadelphia Inquirer this week, quote, that there is not a clean-cut division, unquote, between religion and science. Oh, my aching Aunt Edna. There is not a clean-cut division between religion and science. Really, Mr. Johnson? Really? Not even a little bitty clean-cut division? Razor-thin? Wafer-thin, Mr. Johnson? There's weasel room that maybe that cracker does turn into human Jesus meat in your belly? Despite the fact that no doctor has ever found any Jesus meat in anybody's belly after eating a magic cracker? Despite the fact that you can do subatomic analysis on communion wine and there is no correlation between the communion wine and Jesus' blood? There's no clean-cut division. Well, Stephen Johnson went on. And he said, if you've studied at all creationism versus evolution, there's theistic or God-controlled evolution, and there's variations on all those themes. Hmm.
damn.
God-controlled evolution, and there's variations on all those themes.
Well, God-controlled evolution is sort of evolution for squishy people. And I guess it's a comfort. It's like a theological teddy bear or something. Well, there's evolution, but God started it. And I guess when you do that, you're sort of stepping into Aristotle's shoes and buying into the whole prime mover who, having moved, can move no more. God. Just sickening. Because you see, as long as there's no clear-cut division between religion and science, well, we don't have to worry about the climate. We don't have to worry about, salamanders in streams downstream from mountaintop removal jobs that have two or three eyes and they're not where eyes ought to be in a salamander anymore. We don't have to worry about those because they're going to get a healing. Oh, yes, Jesus, we're going to lay hands upon the salamanders, oh, glory, and we're going to have a big old fundamentalist handhold, and we're going to pray the planet cooler. Yes, we are.
Idiots.
And maybe that's why we celebrate on January the 20th instead of December the 25th. Because running idiots out of government is something to celebrate. Truly it is. Finally having a fighting chance to save this nation is something to celebrate. What Juanita was talking about. Getting us to a place where we no longer do business with companies that feed our soldiers shrapnel-contaminated food. That's a reason to celebrate. You know, we've followed, and we know if those of you, and that includes most of you, who pay attention to the news. We know that people are coming home from Iraq mentally shattered. We know that they're coming home from Iraq with no bullet wounds. And they lose their minds and sit in an apartment in North Carolina and huff cooking spray until it kills them. Because the nightmares won't go away. And the voices won't go away. And the sounds won't go away. And the threats won't go away. And the suspicion won't go away. And the only way you can even forestall it for a time is by so thoroughly self-medicating that you cease to be anything resembling functional. Whether it's booze or aerosol propellant in a Ziploc baggie. It's all self-medication. And can you imagine? Can you imagine? It's bad enough humping 100 pounds of gear on your back, riding around in a questionably armored vehicle, in places where there is no respite from people who hate you and want you to die, the sooner the better. Watching your buddies get slaughtered indiscriminately. And then coming back to base. Coming back to base where maybe you can just escape for a little bit in your Game Boy or your PS2 or 3 or Xbox. Where the violence is make-believe, and there's always an extra life. But sooner or later, you can't sit in your tent and just live on Slim Jims for the duration.
You got to go to chow. You go to the mess hall, and the food don't taste quite right. Nope. Food doesn't taste right at all. And some of the southern boys and the midwestern boys who are familiar with hunting and know what it's like to miss a pellet or two when you're cleaning the grouse or the pheasant or the dove and go and have in their own lives spat out little pellets. Know that rather annoying crunch when you bite down and you get something that's not exactly meat. And oh, it's shrapnel! Gee, I wonder if that's depleted uranium shrapnel! God! Then you chew a little more carefully because you don't want to swallow that crap. Perforated intestine, anyone? So you choke down dinner. And you walk out into the blistering heat of a fading Baghdad evening or a fading Al Anbar evening, and you see that ever-present column of black smoke from the burn pit. And that's when you see the dog go trotting by. You know how it is when a dog finds a bone and there's other dogs around. There's a sort of urgency in his little trot as he goes trotting by, kind of in a hurry. Only Fido doesn't have a bone in his hand. He's got a human limb. And maybe he's not being followed this time because his buddy over there, Spot's got a foot. And you see this, and it doesn't just happen one day, it happens the second day, and it happens the third day, and the fourth day, and the fifth day, until this little parade of cur dogs carrying human remains in their teeth isn't something that you consciously notice anymore. It's just something that makes you scream in your sleep. And you go to your exit interview, which incidentally is not conducted by Charlie Gibson, and at which they serve no pisco sours. You go to your exit interview and they say, "Oh, you having any bad dreams, son?" "Oh, no, I'm just fine. I just want to get home. I'm doing great." Because if you hope to stay in the military, you know that saying that you are having problems is a, you know, one and done. And you sure don't want to go home with a mental on your sheet, on your personnel record, on your 305 or your 664 or 922. Hut, hut! You don't want that. You just want to go the hell home. Just get home. Because there's people home who love you. There's people home who fill the house with the magic smells of what you know is right and good and decent. There's people home that you can cry in front of. There's people home who will bring a cool washcloth and place it on your forehead when the sweating and the screaming starts in the middle of the night. And they won't think there's anything wrong with you for doing it. Because they've sweated and they've screamed waiting for you to come home. Another lawsuit, plaintiffs are contending that Kellogg, Brown, and Root knowingly allowed them to be exposed to sodium dichromate. Sodium dichromate is a chemical used as an anti-corrosive that contains the carcinogen hexavalent chromium. A group of National Guardsmen from Indiana were providing security for KBR workers at the Karmat Ali water plant in southern Iraq, where they were exposed to the sodium dichromate at a water plant, at a water treatment plant. Nice. People have developed lesions on the skin, The lesions spread, filled with fluid. They burst, blisters on the feet, gastrointestinal problems. Dear God. There is a reason to celebrate on January the 20th. A profound reason to celebrate. But not for some. A young man I've watched grow up. He was a fine, fine human being, and I think the world and all of him. My next-door neighbor. He's going back. The daddy of a little boy and a little girl who are the ages of my children. And I've watched those children grow up. That kind of thing happens in a small town. Their daddy's going back. Saw him in the store the other day. And I said, "You going back?" He said, "Yeah, I'm going back." I said, "We sure hope you'll be safe. Stay safe. Watch your back." He said, "Amen." I said, "I can't do much about it, but I tell you what, I will raise seven shades of hell to get you home and get this shit over with. We got to get it over with." And he said, "Brother, you just said a mouthful." So let's celebrate on January 20th, and let's recognize how much work there is to do. So those men and those women can come home to the things that make home feel like home. Chime in anytime, 877-443-2366. This is The Horn. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice.
sip a soda while I sing amazing words. Rings on my fingers, left round the tongue. The face full of bubbles, bumping like a washtub. Sing about my troubles, going down the drain. Drying up the puddles in the back of my brain. But
red beans and rice, red beans and rice, red beans and rice.
I could eat a plate twice.
Red beans and rice,
red beans and rice,
red beans and rice.
Make everything nice.
Red beans and rice.
Welcome to Seton Notes. I'm Tony Seton. Out of the mouths of babes, you might say, and be partly right, though for the wrong reasons. First, let's note that the expression suggests wisdom coming from children who shouldn't know better, if you get my meaning. In fact, the babe in question is what guys refer to as a babe. She's my lovely Denise. I say my only as a point of reference and not as a possessive. She is not only lovely, but also very bright. I told her early on in our relationship, now approaching the beginning of its fifth incredible year, we met on Christmas Day 2004, that being a hard-boiled veteran broadcast journalist, I could never have imagined hooking up with a fashion designer, no matter how beautiful. Her immediate and even response was that she would never have thought she'd find herself involved with a news guy. There it is. I recount this because most of the time she professes a disinterest in current events, focusing, as she does, on the creation and construction of gorgeous, one-of-a-kind outfits for her clients, and with the same intensity bordering on obsession that I do, perusing and writing about this mad, mad world of ours. So you can understand that it raises my eyebrows when she expresses awareness of things happening in Washington and elsewhere, and not a superficial knowledge. She's far better informed than anyone on the local news, and certainly everyone on Fox. As, for instance, she's pretty clear that taxpayers shouldn't be the ones to bail out the auto industry. She thinks the oil industry should. After all, they colluded to drill, 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 and burn a century of crude that put zillions in their pockets and all but destroyed the environment. The oil and the auto industries, kind of like how you can buy printers real cheap, and then they keep selling you ink cartridges. And that's Seton Notes. From Orga to SetonNotes.com, I'm Tony Seton. About 14 minutes before the hour. And let's do the right thing and go straight to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello.
Hello. This is Ann in Portland.
Oh, for crying out loud. Telemarketers. Hello. This is... Need a screener! Those things wouldn't happen if I had a staff. But, you know, you're going to have that kind of thing.
Not that this is anything heroic. It's not. But it would be nice not to bring telemarketing robocalls on the air. God almighty. Couple of nice emails thought I might share with you. This is kind of one of those heaven or hell sort of situations where it's hard to have a middle ground. And I don't, just because it's such a struggle to keep things going here, and I know it's a struggle for you guys to keep things going here. But I just wanted to share a note with you. From a gentleman whose name I won't give, so as to protect him. He says, please excuse the typing, it's not my strength. I work in mental health in Texas. Can you imagine how poorly funded that is? I mean, we sent John Cornyn, Kay Bailey Hutchison, and Tom DeLay to Washington, not to mention he who shouldn't be named. We're also stuck with another complete idiot as governor. Molly sure nailed Rick Perry perfectly with Governor Goodhair. He says, I've never called you, and this is the first time I've ever even written. I work the 3 to 11 shift with preteen boys that have behavior problems. I am, of course, forced to listen to the show a day or two after it's aired. I try to listen on my days off, but life interferes so much that I try and almost always succeed in listening to it before I go in or in the afternoon on my days off. This letter doesn't have a point or a grand statement. It's just to say I listen every chance I get. Thank you, White Rose. I'm a true Southerner, not some transplanted Yankee, as if the way Texas is run, that's a bad idea. I try to care about the planet as much as possible, but this is Texas. You know, where Ike is still unreported disaster, although not in human terms as bad as Katrina, but it is so badly underreported it's like no one ever mentions the ongoing mess there. Of the Texas press, they've largely ignored it. Amazing. I hope you keep doing what you're doing. And I wish there was some way I could help with the funding. But I work for the state of Texas. And that says it all. I can't help but say to you, that letters like that make me know, and I hope they make you know, that we have got to find some way to keep this going. This can't go dark. This cannot go dark. You know, what seems a long time ago when I started this this little attempt on terrestrial radio in America's fifth smallest radio market. You know, when my granddad used to talk to me, he'd say, son, whatever you try to do in life, try to be fifth best. No. The fifth smallest radio market in America. It was a day long with the exception of that marvelous, genial, decent, incredibly intelligent man, Dr. Bill O'Brien. With the exception of him, it was an entire day of right-wing filth. Sun up to sundown and a little bit past. Flimball and Savage and other various and sundry the right-wing poison heads with Dr. Bill, an oasis of sanity in the middle of it. So when I got started there, we developed a slogan, a liberal light in the conservative darkness. And we were. And you know what? We still are. We are a liberal light in the conservative darkness. Because just because January 20th comes and we start finally start getting to run the idiots and the malfeasers and the felons and the rapists and the poisoners and the kidnappers and the throat slitters and the bagmen, just because we finally get the chance to try to run those thugs out of our government, well, that doesn't mean that suddenly there's going to be a blossoming of sane conversation on terrestrial radio. For the most part, with the limited exceptions of the Horn and dear friends of ours like Mike Malloy and Tom Hartman, Randy Rhodes, with those exceptions, well, truly those are candles flickering in a deep, dark night. But we all keep trying. I got copied in, and I'll share this. I don't feel any compunction. I'll go right to the phones in just a second. I got copied in on a note earlier today from a lady by the name of Marcia. She sent it to Mark Levine, copied it to me. She said, I'm a woman in my early 50s who fell in the bathtub in April in kind of a freak accident, or I had a stroke, and the doctor says we'll never know for sure. But I had bleeding in my brain, and it's caused deficits on my left side. She says, I used to live in Virginia, moved to Central Florida in late summer 2005. I think that might have been one of the biggest mistakes of my life. Don't like it there. Anyway, I'm currently in North Carolina with my niece because my recovery was not going so good, so she came and brought me here, and I'm more on track now. She says, I listened both you and Bob Kincaid through White Rose, and I was just listening to you tell Bob you're applying for a job with the Obama administration. There are a lot of things that I believe led to my accident and stroke, some personal, but also the 8 years of assault during this horrid Bush administration on what I hold so dear, which is this country and our Constitution. I'm currently very worried I may lose my job with a big corporation, which would mean after 27 years because I'm not yet eligible for my first retirement until March of 2010, and if I don't make it until then, my retirement will be substantially less and no health insurance. Trust me, given my situation, this is frightening. She says, I'm writing for one reason only. Talking about Mark applying for a job in the Obama administration. If you do go to work for the Obama administration, please make sure they restore our Constitution and, if possible, see that these criminals in the Bush administration are investigated. It literally hurts my heart that they have caused so much death and destruction and will most likely get away with it. I know you will, but I just wanted you to know that a middle-aged woman who has trouble typing with her damaged left hand wanted you to know restoring our Constitution and investigating these freaks is so very important. Thank you for listening and good luck. And she says, Bob, I'm copying you because I wanted to tell you I thought of you a lot when I was in the hospital because one of my teammates from work sent me flowers and he told me they were from West by God, Virginia. Only place I've ever heard that phrase is at the beginning of your show. The Horn, without engaging in some sort of without engaging in some sort of self-congratulatory BS, there are a lot of dreams and aspirations that are carried on the packets that pass back and forth through the servers that are in their aggregate the Horn. My dreams, my hopes, your dreams, all of us together. And like I've said before, the dreaming has to come before the doing. If you start doing with no vision, it's almost worse than if you sat still. And we have dared to dream a lot of dreams on the Horn. And I recognize and I carry fully the awareness of the responsibility that I have, that Guy has, that Mark has, John Fox, Rick Goodner, Rick Smith, Billy Shears, the responsibility that, that the people on the tech end, the behind the curtains, behind the scenes end of the horn, we all recognize the profundity of the responsibility. And it is an honor past honor to share that responsibility. So we're going to keep going. We're going to bust our ass to keep it going. Because, you know, there has to be a place where the nightmares end and the dreams of a hopeful future begin. So I want to thank both those individuals for their kind words, their inspiring words, their heartfelt words, their honest words. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how's it going?
Hey, Gene, what's happening?
Oh, today was a legislative boot camp.
Oh, no. Nobody called you a maggot or anything, did they? You there, Gene?
Yes.
What happened?
Oh.
Take a breath. It's okay.
Last month I went down to that thing, that conference.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, basically they said if you made 60 hours or less, you'd have to lose your accounting care. The state wouldn't pay. Well, we found out today that they opted if you make 80 hours or less.
Go slow. Go slow.
They said that they wouldn't pay, so they upped the amount, there are more people that won't be covered. And so there's that. And, in addition to that, they dropped the amount that people would qualify. It used to be that you had, it still is technically, that you had to, you know, if you had made $1,900 a month, you could get state services. Well, they dropped it down to $1,300 with a 5-year track back. So if you spend your funds down and because you're too damn rich, you know, that still might not get you there because of the stupid 5-year rule. So there's that mess. Does this affect me? No, it doesn't. I'll probably be fine for a couple more years, maybe 4 if I'm lucky. But I'm so mad at this crap because stupid idiots. They said more. We want more services, more funds, but they won't tax it.
Gene, when you said it was legislative boot camp, I was a little bit flip, and I apologize.
No, it's fine.
No, I made a little smart-ass comment, and I was wrong for that. And
it's cool. I mean,
no, they didn't call you that. They treated you like that.
Yeah. No. Well, it wasn't. This was the pre. I mean, we haven't actually seen the legislatures yet. This was just the pre-notion to let you know what to expect. Now, the good part about this is, and I'm sorry to get all worked up and panicked.
No, don't apologize. And what you're doing is not panicking.
Well, maybe the legislatures are looking at the governor's budget and saying, we can't fund this. But I'm I'm just pissed. I organized capitalist legalized crime as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, the idea that $1,900 a month is somehow wealth.
Yeah, and they only cut it down to 13.
Well, that's going backwards.
Yeah, they want to cut it down to 13, and it's so. I'm so mad. I could spit. I love this state. I want this state to thrive, but. Oh, if this keeps up, I ain't staying. I don't know where I'll go, but, oh, I'm just so mad.
You should be. Don't be ashamed of your anger. What does this mean in real and practical terms, Gene?
Okay, well, let's see. That's 80 hours a month. So basically, that's about, if you go with 40 hours a week for people that work a regular job, back in the day when we had a 40-hour work week, at least officially, you know, that basically, I guess that means that if you need a lot more care, I mean, I'm safe. I get 107, so I'm okay, which is, practically, that's about, what, 3 to 5 hours a day at 107?
Yeah.
So 80 a week is, what, maybe an hour and a half to get up, which a lot of people take that long just to get up. What about meal prep? Maybe not. Going down to bed? Probably. Sorry, Charlie. No, basically, you know, and the state won't cover they won't pay for the caregivers. So I don't know if SEIU, I'm assuming they're doing something, but I haven't heard from SEIU about it, what they're doing. But, I mean, it's,
if I could interrupt you just for a moment, Gene.
Sure. Sure.
What is the excuse being given for this? I think I know, but let's...
Basically, you know, well, the governor... Yeah, I can't fault the governor. I mean, basically, his priority is education. You know, he wants Oregon to have a future.
Yeah, but this is robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Yeah, I know, but you see, ever since back in 1995, before I got here, there's this tax advocate, Bill Sizemore, and he put a 5% cap on education funding for property tax. And ever since then, and it's a constitutional amendment, and ever since then, we've had this rivalry between education and health care. And you gotta give, you know, you gotta give up one to pay the other, and I'm just, here's a couple of the programs that are definitely going to get cut out, completely gone. One is SHIBA, which is basically that help for the elderly so they can figure out their insurance, and RSVP, which if memory serves, is the health is the care attendant respite program, that's going to be gone. That's assuming, of course, that the budget passes. For the Department of Human Services, they're looking to cut $604 million.
They never do this stuff, Gene, without saying, "Well, so and so can take up the slack." What are the churches going to do this now?
I don't know, but the governor's a Democrat, so you know it's, you know, I know he's in.
Right. Well, the governor's a Democrat, Gene, but you know, you've got, I think you're going to have a new Democratic senator, and,
you've just barely got a Democratic majority in the state House and Senate. Barely. And it's like, basically, the thing about Oregon is, Oregon does not like sales tax. Traditionally, they just don't like it, so they can't, people don't sales tax. Well, then there's income tax or property tax. Well, thank you, Mr. Sizemore, property taxes have been cut. So that leaves just income tax. And, of course, then Oregon's got the kicker law that says if the state makes more than 2% of the budget that they estimated, you get the 2% back.
But you've just put your finger on something, Gene. If we can just work through this real quick.
Sure, fine.
This business of, you don't like property tax, you don't like sales tax, they don't like this tax and they don't like that tax. Nobody likes tax.
The thing is, it
has been a very, very successful political strategy, tactic, yes, indeed, for the right wing to scream about how evil taxes are.
Yeah.
But cutting taxes, as you are proving, has very intense and dangerous real-world consequences. There are people who need certain services. If we are not to just tell them that my God, that, and I know there are people listening to this show who hear that it's happening in Oregon and are simply aghast.
Well, the thing about it is, the weird, because they're telling us about this, because one of the other programs is running a $5 million deficit. Now, there's something called Oregon Project Independence. And right now, it's mainly for seniors. And the way that it was originally set up was the state paid for it, and it cost the state $200 a month to keep people in their homes. Well, the legislature, they've kind of worked things around so that now they're wanting to do federal matching funds. That ups that price by $5,000. But, of course, because they think they have Medicaid matching funds, not a big deal. But in the meantime, that particular program is running a $5 million deficit, and it doesn't show up on the damn books. Oh, I could just scream. I could scream. And the thing, and Oregon is considered a leader in this field, and we are, but we need to refocus on prevention and keeping people out. And I probably shouldn't be saying this over the net waves, but I'm tired. I gotta go through the same spiel tomorrow in front of my own committee, and I don't wanna do this. I'll be so damn glad when my term is up in July. I'm not gonna run again. I might not even be a member. I'm just so sick of this crap. We've had this thing going ever since I can remember moving here. It's been I got here in 99. I started this going in 2001 or 2003. It's 2008, soon to be 2009. I'm tired. And people are going to call me, things are tough everywhere. Well, yeah, things are tough everywhere. I would be.
But look, take it. We're going to have to make up these revenue shortfalls somewhere. And I know that Obama has said he just wants to let the Bush tax cuts run out and have done with it that way. But we're going to. Somebody's got to pay. And frankly, it's time for us to stop asking the most fragile among us to carry the biggest part of the burden, Gene. That's what it boils down to. And I understand how sick you are of these committees. I would be too. And of having to constantly deliver this kind of news. God almighty.
Well, here's the sad part about it, okay? I actually spoke up. I said, have you ever gotten together with the Education Committee and the other committees that are asking to get cut and talked about trying to allow you for tax reform? And of course, that was when I got the spiel. Well, the Democrats just barely got a majority. If they raise taxes, they'll hang that. Well, they didn't. She didn't say this in so many words, but they'll hang that around their necks like a steak for dog. And the sad part of it is, it's like, okay. So I said, go. You don't like sales tax. Go with a value added tax, or what John calls a GST, goods and services tax. That's a regressive tax. But nonetheless, and I'd be the one, because if I understand the goods and services tax, from what I understand, the manufacturer, it taxes a product for every step of the way. Now, the manufacturers of the product can get the taxes back. The end consumer can't. But supposedly, that keeps the prices go down. But, you know, I reduce to saying, yeah, I'll pay a regressive tax because, hey, I figure if I pay it, they can't. You know, it's like somebody's going to do this. I might as well pay my own services, for God's sake. And it's sure a lot cheaper than going private. I'm gonna let you go, Bob.
I understand, Gene.
I'll catch you later.
Okay.
See
Take
you.
A deep breath. Hang in there, brother.
Yeah, I will.
Bye. And wow, do I feel like a vacuous SOB when I say, hang in there, brother. What do you say? Wouldn't you kind of like to have, oh, I don't know, Grover Norquist in on that call? You filthy, motherless, soulless, godless bastard who wants to drown the federal government in a bathtub. Tell my friend Gene what you want, what your tax policy is, Grover. See, these repig-licking, the revenue policy wonks, they live at least in a vacuum, and at best in a world where people don't need personal care. They live in a world that doesn't include Galveston Island or the Lower Ninth Ward or the Mississippi Gulf Coast. Grover Norquist stands around eating his hors d'oeuvres. And if he gets a spot on his shirt, he orders up another $300 shirt and talks about tax policy some more and how the American people are overburdened with taxes. Of course, what he means when he says American people and overburdened, what he means is American corporations and paying any taxes at all. Gotta learn the code. Radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee said in the last couple of days that the Republican Party needs to eschew the squishy middle and get back to its hardcore, hateful right-wing roots. In other words, the Republican Party needs to get back to the business, and I do mean business, of spitting. And I'm a consonant off in that word of spitting on the most fragile among us. Except for the fetuses. Hell, a fetus isn't as fragile as millions of living, breathing American citizens. A fetus has all its needs met. But we can't meet the needs of living people? Someday that fetus might cure cancer. Someday some right-winger might actually know and care about someone who will move heaven and earth to the extent they are humanly able. And need only a little bit of help getting out of bed in the morning and a little bit of help with meals.
But this country doesn't have time for that. Because make no mistake, it ain't just Oregon. And if it's Oregon, that means it's 15 times as bad. You remember the email from a little bit ago from the man who said, I work in mental health in Texas. If it's bad in Oregon, it's worse in Texas, and it's damn near a nightmare in Mississippi and Alabama. But nobody's getting it right in this country. Because we've allowed the dialogue to be changed so dramatically, so drastically. So that anybody who stands up and says the service part of this, you know, the part of the Constitution that says promote the general welfare. Well, they're communists, socialists, pal around with terrorists who want to bomb our precious Pentagon. And I hate them for that. I loathe them. I detest them. I despise them. I begrudge them the air that they breathe. And yeah, the clean water that they drink. There's that magnificent line from the John Sayles film, Mate One. All we got in common is our misery. So the least we can do is share that. How would you like, and I'm not minimizing anything, I'm trying to drive a point home. This is a national sickness. It is not a county sickness, a city sickness, a statewide sickness. This is a national sickness, and it is damn near terminal at this point. Unless we get our priorities in order. How would you like to, just as a, you know, a what have you? How would you like to, you know, when you're asleep and, you know, in the middle of the night and you kind of, and you need a drink. How would you like to get up and put your feet in your fluffy slippers and go padding into the kitchen and grab yourself a glass and open the tap and fill that glass with water? And what comes out of the tap is black. Tarry. Poison. Well, that's Printer, West Virginia. Pam Johnson is a registered nurse, and she says 98% of the people I've seen on Printer Road up Printer Holler have gallbladder disease and children's teeth are dissolving. The water runs black every day in Printer, West Virginia. There's about 300 households there. Oh, only 300, Bob? Well, they don't matter! I don't say that. You don't say that. None of us believe that. None of us factually think that. But the West Virginia Coal Association does. And the National Mining Association does. And, of course, they write great big checks to all manner of legislators in this country. The National Mining Association. Sure. And Americans for Balanced Energy Choices or Americans for Clean Coal, they think that too. 300 people up Printer Holler, 300 households, that is, more than 300 people, 300 households up Printer Holler don't matter a damn to the West Virginia Coal Association, the National Mining Association, the Friends of Coal, or their bought and paid for politicians. It doesn't matter if children's teeth dissolve. It doesn't matter if 98% of the people on Printer Road have gallbladder disease. Where's Printer? Printer's a little dot on the landscape, surrounded by 11,000 acres of mountaintop removal jobs, processing plants, and gigantic, toxic, carcinogenic, life-threatening seas of sludge. In Printer Holler, there's kidney failure, there's liver failure, there's Parkinson's-like neurological disease. There are ordinary respiratory illnesses and extraordinary respiratory disease. Virtually every kind of cancer you can imagine can be found up Printer Holler. On 300 yards of Printer Holler Road, there were 5 people diagnosed with brain tumors. There's a steady flow of automobiles out the road and down to Charleston or up to Beckley because somebody has a loved one in the hospital. Just as with the people that Gene was talking about, these people do not matter to the grand purveyors of power. Long and long ago, coal companies, otherwise known as God Almighty in West Virginia and much of Appalachia, got permission to pump vast volumes of toxic waste into old, abandoned underground coal mines. Those coal mines fed directly into the groundwater supply for Printer Holler. There's none of what we here in the hills call city water going to Printer, mind you. If you drank, you drank from your well. As your father and mother did, as your grandparents did, as your great-grandparents did, as your great-great-grandparents did, as your great-great-great-grandparents did. For yea, verily, people have been on that land for upwards of 300 years. 9 generations. The toxic waste pumping into Printer, abandoned mines around Printer was supposed to have stopped in 1984, but, you know, the coal, stop is not a word in the fiends of coal's vocabulary. Because they are lawless thugs. They got caught doing it again as recently as 2001, 7 short years ago. And those mountaintop removal operations going on around Printer, every day generates a little bit more goo, a little bit more sludge, a little bit more filth, a little bit more toxin, a little bit more cancer, a little bit more death, a little bit more disease, a little bit more misery. There are literally black and gray flecks of toxic heavy metals that flow out of people's taps. They cannot drink their water. The water stinks of rotten eggs from hydrogen sulfide. For the chemists in the audience, you can verify for me. The hydrogen sulfide has corrosive qualities and is as well in its gaseous form neurotoxic. Now, how's that problem being solved? Well, there's a reason I call our friends at Coal River Mountain Watch the bravest, hardest-working people I know. Fighting mountaintop removal, fighting to rebuild their communities, takes enough time. But through the genius of the effort at Coal River Mountain Watch, there's also something called the Sludge Safety Project. And the Printer Gas, or the Printer Water Project. The Printer Water Fund is a byproduct of the efforts of Coal River Mountain Watch and the folks who live up Printer Holler. They literally have to truck in clean drinking water. They pump it at a nearby town's the water supply,
They're not charged for the water. But then they have to ship it and they have to store it. And it doesn't happen for free. This is what I'm talking about when I tell you about the efforts of Coal River Mountain Watch. When we talk about those people, we are in the presence of heroes, the real ones. And they are the ones who are taking on these problems and solving them. Because we cannot wait. They can't wait in Oregon. They can't wait in Texas. They can't wait on the Mississippi Gulf Coast. They can't wait in Alabama. They can't wait in West Virginia, Kentucky, or Virginia. They can't wait in the toxified sites of Montana and Wyoming. If there is to be a salvation of this nation, it will be a grassroots salvation. Yea, verily. With regard to Oregon, our buddy David in Tennessee says, you know, I lived there then. Bill Sizemore was a wingnut that loved the California Prop 13 that limited property taxes. Sizemore made a mint in contributions so as to excite 45-year-olds that had kids in colleges that hated the idea of funding good high schools and grammar schools through property taxes. Mine don't need the schools. Why should I pay for other kids? He says, I heard it from coworkers. I was sickened by it. So theirs are educated. Let's stop schools for all that come later. Oregon has a massive blind spot about sales taxes. Yeah, they're regressive, but they do work and serve a need. So Oregon's faced with state income tax and property taxes aimed at all the things that should be bought for a successful state, one with a future. So now we have too many animals in too small a space with too little food. No way to provide a bit of relief. Welcome to Bushmerica. I say again, I lived in Oregon from 1979 to 1997. I watched this process go forward and ruin. Oh, by the way, Gordon Smith, the pig that wanted to change his spots recently, kissed Sizemore's ass to get elected the first time. This stuff doesn't happen. Thank you, David. This stuff doesn't happen in a vacuum, and it doesn't happen by accident. That's the thing. These are in. You know, there is a real difference between negligence and intentional acts. Negligence is punishable. Intentional acts must be punished. Katrina was an intentional act. Printer Holler is an intentional act. The assault on people needing basic services just to get through otherwise days that are more difficult than you and I might ever dream of. The effort to deprive them of those services is an intentional act. And all these things should be treated as such. I get a lot of emails about, well, you know, we need to prosecute the Bush administration, and we can't have any blanket pardons, and Gerald Nadler's doing some interesting stuff in the House. And I agree! Sweet Jesus, I agree! Paul Wolfowitz should enter a jail, the door should slam shut, and it should never open for him again. The same thing for John Yoo. At the very least, somebody out there ought to be filing bar complaints about every day with the state of Pennsylvania bar complaining for what John Yoo did as a lawyer. If nothing else, John Yoo should be deprived from ever having the economic ability to earn money as an officer of the court ever, ever, ever again. There must be punishment. But we must not get lost in the celebrity criminals. Every Republican state operation that has as one of its core principles the notion that there's too much taxes should be forced to live as these people who need little and ask for less get on a daily basis. The Republican chairman of Oregon should live within the boundaries that Gene described. The entire state government of West Virginia, with few limited exceptions, should be moved up Printer Holler and force-fed that goddamn water! Drink it through a straw, bathe in it, wash your clothing in it, baptize your children in it, and take a bath in it. Maybe then the punishment for their intentional conduct would fit the crime. Maybe then they would realize what real reverence for human life is, as opposed to marching around outside a women's health clinic with some stupid-ass sign, "Protect the unborn." Screw you! Protect the born! Sorry. It just gets to be... just gets to be a little bit frustrating. Our buddy David in South Carolina writes in. By the way, David's a new grandpa. Brand new little baby boy on the ground. Little grandson. I've seen the pictures. They're charming. Congratulations, David. He lives in one of those places where it's hard to be a liberal. I remember the christening speech of Judge Smales in Caddyshack. Standing there all pretentious. Ted Baxter, what a genius he was. It's easy to grin when your ship has come in and you've got the stock market beat. But the man who's worthwhile is the man who can smile when his pants are too tight in the seat. It's kind of what it's like being a liberal in West Virginia, being a liberal in South Carolina, being a liberal in Tennessee, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, Virginia, Texas, Rick. Not to say that liberals in other places have it massively easy and it's some sort of workers' paradise where they whistle the Internationale on the way to work every day. No. But when you're surrounded on all sides and you have to get up every day and say, "I've got them right where I want them, I'm surrounded." Man, that makes being liberal fun. And our buddy David in South Carolina is one of those people. He says, our governor, Mark Sanford, wants South Carolina to refuse federal money for any make-work projects. He also wants to run for president next time. Of course, he's a Republican. That's right. The greening of the economy, the green infrastructure economy, the massive infusion of funds to fix America's crumbled, not crumbling, forget that participle, we're in past tense, baby, crumbled infrastructure, that's just make-work. Also in South Carolina, according to the report David has sent along, the economy is causing more painful budget cuts, this time hurting some of South Carolina's most vulnerable children. Well, there you have it. More Republican politics coming right down the pike. 4 child care centers for special needs kids will close December 31st as a result of a $22 million state cut. The Hollis Center in Greenville has been closed abruptly. Parents have just 4 weeks to find alternatives for their kids. The story references McKaylee Dozier, who attends Hollis. McKaylee has epilepsy. Medications for that delayed her development. In 2 months at Hollis, McKaylee's vocabulary has grown from fewer than 30 words to over 100. Lori Dozier says, you know, life is so much easier being able to say, McKaylee, what do you want? And little McKaylee can look at me and say, Mama, bottle. That's what the Hollis Center has meant both to Lori Dozier and her little girl, Kaylee, McKaylee. Mama, bottle. That's all going away. 28 children get therapy and child care at the Hollis Center. 15 employees are gone. South Carolina, so the Disabilities Board is looking around asking churches if they want to expand their daycares. Yeah, okay, that's going to work. Because McKaylee doesn't need vocabulary lessons. She needs hands laid on her and prayed over. The Hollis Center has been serving folks in Greenville since 1970. But 8 years of Bushmerica has succeeded in killing it. And you know how it is with the right wing. Well, I don't need that anyway. That's just another government make-work prize for wasteful spending of the taxpayers' money. Why can't they do that? The private sector can do that a lot better. The private sector isn't interested in this kind of thing. Because the margin on it is so thin to begin with that it is impossible to make a profit at it. The only way this happens is if you do it and I do it. And the way we do it is through the government of we the people in order to form a more perfect union. You know the rest. The part about the general welfare. Because you see, a country that has trillions of dollars for Wall Street bankers that can provide billions of bailout dollars for the airlines after September the 11th, which then turn around and lay people off. A country that has that, but does not have a way to make sure that somebody can get a hot meal in the morning and a little help getting out of bed and into a chair. That country has already fallen. That country isn't in danger of collapse. That country has collapsed. A country that can enforce a no-fly zone over a hurricane area, not because flying over would present some risk of harm to the survivors and the victims of the storm, but because we simply don't want anybody to see exactly what happened. In other words, a government that puts its own public relations image ahead of the actual reality of life on the ground for its own citizens, that country isn't in danger of collapsing. That country has collapsed. And the fact that no one is talking about the collapsed country doesn't mean the country is any less collapsed. The fact that people are still willing to stampede and run over a single human being in a doorway, having been incited to riot by the marketing vice president of Walmart in order to get an $800 plasma television. The fact that America is still affixed as if some with some invisible umbilical cord to that television, the fact that that all of that obtains and that they can still watch Dancing with the Who Wants to Be a Nashville does not mean the country has not collapsed. Collapse happens in the population of a country. It doesn't happen in the public relations of a country. Collapse happens when a country and states make determinations that two-year-old children who have epilepsy just aren't worth it. That isn't a collapsing country. That is a collapsed country. The real inquiry, then, is what one can do Can you uncollapse a country? Can you build the country back? Can you find what is good and decent among the rubble created by the vandal hordes that we know as conservatives and republicans? Can you find the good buried in the rubble, floating in the blackened water? And can you rebuild from what you find something that resembles the original shattered dream? That's the question we face. You face it, I face it. Whether he knows it or not, Barack Obama faces it. If he is making assumptions about his presidency based on the fact that everything is still okay, then the likelihood of his success goes down dramatically. If you drive on a tire that has one-fourth as much air in it as it is supposed to have, and you assume that it's still okay because it still looks like a tire, don't worry. You keep driving along. It won't look like a tire for much longer, and then the wheels won't look much more like wheels either. We have in front of us the narrowest of windows, the meagerest of opportunities to fix things. And I'm telling you now, you can't solve it. Yeah, dream it before you do it. But sooner or later, we got to start doing. Some of that is simply by shouting down the people who want to see the country keep collapsing because they've figured out a way to make a dollar at it. Because as long as they're out there, and as long as they can get away with screaming, well, you know what we need to solve the financial crisis is a free market. 3 million people can be thrown out of work, and that's what the free market does. But the sons of bitches weren't there hollering for it. No. Like it or not, this is our reality. And to scream that you can put 3 million people out of work and then watch all the ripples go across the very broad employment pond from that and just get better from it? Oh, hell no. It will have repercussions that you and I have not dreamt of. You know, the United Auto Workers have headed to Washington in a caravan of sorts. They're concerned with keeping their jobs. But there's also something impressive in it as well. In that the United Auto Workers in heading to Washington, D.C. aren't just talking about their jobs. They're talking about greening the economy. They're talking about rebuilding the infrastructure. They're talking about making sure that people who have health care keep health care and that more people beyond them have health care. Labor is the mother of activism in this country. And it pleases me, and it gives me hope, to see that the United Auto Workers are making that argument. And frankly, I don't have any patience anymore for saying that Detroit must be allowed to simply die. Because it's not Detroit that will die. It's moms and dads. It's kids. its school districts. My Lord in heaven, a federal district judge in Huntington, West Virginia, recently ruled that no matter how much a coal operation here, a mountaintop removal operation, no matter how much it creates more printers, that it cannot be shut down. No matter how many people it poisons, it can't be shut down. No matter how much land in Clay County, West Virginia, is reduced to the rubble of a damn moonscape for all of foreseeable eternity, it can't be shut down. Why was that decision made? That decision was made because at the last minute, in what can only be described as an ambush, the coal company lawyers brought in a county commissioner from Clay County who said the county would go bankrupt without the judge let this coal company go on turning a quadrant of the county into a toxic dump. And a judge facing a witness who has sworn to tell the truth was put in a terrible spot. Tell the county to go bankrupt? Now, I think the county commissioner was probably lying his ass right off. But that was what he testified to, and it was damned hard to challenge. And a judge made that decision. That it was worth turning a portion of a county in West Virginia into a toxic waste dump that will be toxic forevermore, so that the pittance in taxes paid by that operation could continue to prop up the county government. Because county government isn't just county commissioners or the land surveyor, that it is moms and dads, grandmas and grandpas, that there are services provided by the county that are valuable for the rest of the citizens of that county, and he couldn't just put an axe to it. And yet, in the broader scope of this country, there are people who are screaming to put an axe, not to the big three, but to the disparate 3 million. And to do it at Christmas. Man, you cannot beat the brass and the timing and the sense of absolute soulless misery that resides in the soul of a Republican, now can you? Hey, y'all, let's go crap on the working Americans at Christmas. This ought to be fun. Kiss my ass, Scrooge. We got you whooped, boy. That's what we're talking about, isn't it? But we have an opportunity. And I should probably note that there is a chance that I won't make it back to the microphone in time tomorrow night. There are two press conferences slated. One in Beckley at 1:30 p.m. and one in Charleston at 4:30 p.m. We talked a little bit about this Friday evening with our buddy Rory from Coal River Mountain Watch. The report is out from Downstream Strategies. And we'll be talking more about it in the days to come. But using, what did we talk about earlier this evening, boys and girls? We talked about science. And about how a reliance on facts as opposed to wishful thinking is a lot more likely to result in positive, tangible improvements for people in this country and in this region. And the facts are in, and we'll be talking about this at the press conferences tomorrow. The facts are in. people in Appalachia, especially down Coal River Way, have a real future with those wind turbines on top of Coal River Mountain. Anything that passes itself off as a future that relies on destroying Coal River Mountain is a hateful fraud. That's my take on it. That's not an official statement, but that's my take on it. So if I go to the if I go on to the press conference in Charleston, I may not be behind the microphone tomorrow evening, or I may at the very least be late to the microphone. So I hope you will forgive me that. This just in via email from our friend William. I have to say, as a cautious observer who does not participate in the shopping madness, that the TV makes it all is well, all is forgotten. As long as the ads run and people appear to be working and living in nice homes and perfect families with a great career, then all appears normal. To me, this is the truly scary part, and this is the reality presented and accepted. As long as you're the one who's not left out and behind and considered erased or obliterated, eradicated and forgotten. And that's how that little religion of consumerism works. Thank you, William. Very well said. It's the all is forgotten part that's most important. You ever notice that communities that don't have cable yet tend to be healthier communities in terms of its public dialogue and debate? Yeah, I thought so. And at least we're talking about it here, right? I don't know what others are talking about. But at least we're talking about it here. And we are able to continue talking about it here because of you. Because you are determined that this will continue for as long as you can continue it. Special thanks go out to the regular subscribers whose contributions roll in month by month. And it's also fair to say that those are not always sustainable. They come and they go. And I worry when people have to end them, but I certainly understand it. But I want to tell you from my standpoint that we will scratch and claw and gouge and poke and dig and hang on for dear life for as long as you make that possible. Because every now and then I get reminded how important these conversations are. Not me, but these conversations, how important they are to so many people. And, you know, I can't get over the fact that I was raised reading the Bible. I was raised right. And there's that whole story, and I know the right wing loves to hang on every word of it because they think it's got something to do with sex. That's the way it is with them. It's always sex, 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 sex. Dirty, dirty, dirty Republicans. But there's that business about God saying that he would not destroy Sodom and Gomorrah if there could be but 30 good people left. Well, would you then destroy Sodom if there was only 10? No, I would not destroy it if there were 10. Would you not destroy it if there were 5? Well, there are far more than 5 or 10 or 30 people for whom the horn is a vital and meaningful part of their lives, and yea, verily, of my own. And so that, therefore, is what will drive me to try to keep this going. And you have my word on that. Thanks again. If it was not made manifest earlier. Thanks again to the bravest, hardest working people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch. CRMW.net, coalriverwind.org, and the Printer Water Project. On the ground heroism, 365 days a year, 24 hours a day. Thank you for your support. Thank you to John Fox and Peter Godbold, our chief engineer and our IT professional. Thank you to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk, who literally saved liberal talk on the internet with WhiteRoseSociety.org. Ben seldom gets the recognition that he so richly deserves. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
Cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to Monday. Monday evening, to be precise, about a minute and a half past the hour where I am. Lord knows what it'll be when the internet latency gets this to you. Awfully happy to have you on board this evening. Weekend is over. 2 days of enforced are kind of over. Although, if you were paying attention, you could have broken your silence last night with our very own John Fox on All Foxed Up. So it's not entirely true when I say that it's kind of 2 days of enforced silence for me, okay? Is that a little bit clearer? Yeah. Okay, good. So I'm all better now. Hope things are working out nicely for you. And, I've been a bad talk show host. Well, not bad. Just, what's the word I'm looking for? Less than prudent. There we go. Less than prudent. Since we're not doing much in the way of Christmas this year, I've decided to take it upon myself to cook something yummy every day from now until the new year. Things that I don't ordinarily have a whole lot of time for doing. I've tried to figure out a way to make time for doing something yummy out of the oven, off the stove every day. And I just pulled several pans of homemade chocolate chip cookies out of the oven to the delighted squeals of every children from the age of 41 all the way down to, you know, not quite 2. And I had a few myself. Now, I've said in the past that I don't spend a lot of time, I try not to eat a lot before the show, because it kind of makes me feel slow and stupid. But you can't have fresh, hot, squishy chocolate chip and pecan cookies out of the oven and not indulge in them a little bit yourself. And so I might be a little slow and stupid this evening.